Fidel is the Vice President for Policy Analysis and General Counsel at the Pew Center on Global Climate Change. He directs the Domestic Analysis Program, including coordination and oversight of analyses, reports, and workshops that focus on the climate policy initiatives of the legislative and executive branches of the federal government. He also oversees the Pew Center's Science, Environmental Impacts, and Adaptation Portfolio. Mr. Seidel has over 25 years of experience working on global environmental issues. Prior to joining the Pew Center, he managed EPA's Stratospheric Protection Program, including the development and implementation of the Montreal Protocol, and the Regulatory and Voluntary Partnership Programs developed under Title VI of the Clean Air Act. Mr. Seidel has a degree in Economics and Urban Studies from Columbia University and a Law degree and Master's in City Planning from Rutgers University. Thank you, Stephen.
And thank you, Emma, and thanks for putting on this webinar, and thank you all for attending. The level of interest is really quite exceptional and shows that we're making really good progress in terms of beginning to address the adaptation needs for state and local governments and across our nation. I'm going to really pick up on where Allison left off and focus most of my remarks on the specifics across different federal agencies in terms of their initial efforts to begin adapting to climate change and also to provide the resources and tools to help state and local governments in their efforts. But first, a word about the Pew Center. We've been around a little over a dozen years. Many of you have probably heard of us or used some of the materials we've prepared. We are fiercely independent, very much nonprofit, and definitely nonpartisan. Focus on research and analysis. Work very closely with both Republicans and Democrats across Congress. But we also work very closely with the business community, and that makes us a little different than a lot of other non-governmental organizations. We're advised by 46, mostly Fortune 500 companies, all of whom are very much committed to addressing climate change. Most of our work at the Pew Center over the years, and like most of the work that's been done related to climate change, is focused on reducing emissions or mitigation. But I think this phrase, avoiding the unmanageable and managing the unavoidable, does a good job of capturing the need for both mitigation and adaptation. We need to avoid the unmanageable to mitigate by reducing emissions, or we're going to end up with doubled CO2 levels and well beyond what will be harmful to our society. But at the same time, we know that given the emissions that have occurred to date, that changes are already occurring and therefore are unavoidable, and we've got to adapt to those changes. And we also know that even with the best efforts to reduce emissions in the near term, that there will be additional climate change that would be unavoidable. So really, we need a combination of both approaches in moving forward. Picking up specifically on the role of the federal government, I want to build on what Allison talked about before, and that is that, you know, if you think about that all adaptation is local, then what role really should the federal government play? Well, the federal government has a direct role in terms of the vast assets that it is in charge of managing. Approximately 30% of the U.S. land areas is directly or indirectly managed by the U.S. government, or at least in a stewardship relationship. There are almost 500,000 structures, bridges, roads, and so forth, and the U.S. is also a huge landholder, and either through leases or direct ownership of property, of critical infrastructure. But from the perspective of many of you and the state and local governments that you work for, the federal government's role is more in terms of setting standards and program guidelines. Much of what they do directly or indirectly impacts what you can or can't do. There's also a lot in terms of financial and technical resources that flow through the federal government. And then finally, the federal government has a critical role to play in terms of bringing together different jurisdictions across different sectors and so forth. And the first report we did at the Pew Center was Adapting to Climate Change, a Call for Federal Leadership. And this really set the stage for essentially saying that the federal government has really got to dive in and what we term sort of mainstream adaptation across federal programs. And I think that the Climate Change Interagency Adaptation Task Force that was set up and the executive order on sustainability that President Obama put out has really jump-started the program in a very positive way across the federal government. And you've seen just enormous activity in the last 2 years that you really hadn't seen before across the federal government. And, you know, it really is just the beginning, but it's a very good and important beginning that's occurred. And we've looked specifically at what federal agencies are doing in our second report, which is the link to is provided here. And I would encourage you, if you want more specific information, that you can go to this, to our pewclimate.org website, or click on this link, and look more at the specifics. Our report looks across 10 agencies and 20 agencies, I'm sorry, 10 departments and 20 agencies within those departments, and also across the executive office of the federal government. And you can see sort of the list of agencies on the right-hand side of your screen. Within each, we've tried to identify what major initiatives or strategies have been developed by the agency, what programs and institutional mechanisms have they been focusing on, and what tools and resources are they making available. And I would think the tools and the resources would be the things of most of interest to you. Just to highlight a couple of them here, and then I'll go into more details over the next couple of slides. But for instance, the Department of Energy is looking closely at the relationship between water availability and energy production. And that's certainly important not just from hydropower perspective, but also in terms of fossil fuel, electrical generation, steam-based electrical generation, and certainly nuclear power also. The Department of Defense is taking a close look at the Arctic, particularly given the ice melting that's occurred there and the opening up of the Arctic waterways that's occurred over time. But they're also looking at the impact of climate change on some of their basic missions and the potential for environmental refugees as more extreme weather events occur throughout the world. And then finally, they also have vast installations. Not surprising, the Navy in particular will be impacted by sea level rise, but across the board, DOD is looking at their installations and the impact of the various changes on those installations and what they can do to adapt to those changes. And then Health and Human Services is looking at and working closely with the public health community to begin looking at heat stress impacts and early warning systems that might be developed, and also the spread of disease vectors. But now I want to look in more detail at just a few of these, and I think a good place to start is some of the NOAA initiatives. And really why this is a good place to start is because in developing adaptation plans, one of the first questions that is often raised is, well, what are we adapting to? What types of changes are going to be critical to my community? I need to understand what those changes are in order to begin looking at where the vulnerabilities might be. And NOAA's come forward with a proposal to develop something that they call climate services. And climate services is really this effort to provide the types of basic climate data, products, and information that the user community needs to begin looking at adapting to climate change. It's designed a new website, this climate.gov, that is meant to be sort of the go-to website for that information. And over time, they hope to expand the types of resources that they're providing and make them in a user-friendly way. But in addition to climate services and the website that they've been developing, they've also developed something called the Regional Integrated Sciences and Assessment Team that Allison mentioned briefly. And these are, I believe there's 11 of them now across the country, and it's shown on this map. And they're university-based, typically interdisciplinary research groups that are really focused on dealing with regional issues and analyzing the impacts on resource management planning and policy decisions that are most important to those regions. And I know probably some of you have been working with experts at the RESAs, and you know, if you haven't, I'd encourage you to get in touch and see if they have resources that might be useful for your particular needs. In addition, because both Allison and Jen, one of our later presenters, focused on some of NOAA's coastal efforts, I wanted to also just mention the coastal adaptation resources that, that NOAA has up on a website, and it's very much working closely with the coastal, with communities on the coast that are impacted by sea level rise and changes in extreme weather, and this is also a very important resource that might be of use to you. Moving on now, next to the Army Corps of Engineers, they play a critical role in probably most of your jurisdictions in one form or another. They're responsible for 11 million acres of public lands, 900 ports and harbors, 12,000 miles of levees, 12,000 miles of commercial inland waterways, 3% of the electricity that's produced through hydropower. So very significant resources across our country. Their initiatives in the area of adaptation began with an interagency working group which is focused on water resources, and they've come up with the report with the link as part of this presentation on climate change considerations and how they can be incorporated into water resource issues. Like many agencies, they're moving forward through the use of pilot projects. They're looking at a range of situations, reservoir resiliency, back bay flooding, shoreline protection, feasibility, to really identify in those case studies what are the information tools that are required, what are the policies that either work or need to be modified, and then branching out from those pilot projects, begin to develop new resources, new tools, new policies and guidelines that would be more broadly applicable. And then finally, they also have developed guidance on incorporating sea level change projections into design and planning. Next, I want to talk about the Department of Interior. I think Allison maybe briefly mentioned the Climate Science Centers. These are an offshoot within the USGS of their Wildlife and Climate Center. There are now climate science centers established in Alaska, Southwest, Southeast, Northwest, and North Central. The goal, at least initially, is to have a total of 8 of these regional centers to provide the type of climate science information critical with the focus, because this is the Department of Interior, on natural resource issues, including managing the land, water, fish, wildlife, and cultural heritage resources. The Department of Interior is also developing a series of other, I believe they're called landscape conservation centers, where they're working very closely with the user communities to try to bridge the needs of the user communities with the climate science and information needs to begin addressing regional, again, natural resource issues in those communities. And then in the Department of Transportation, they developed what I think is a very useful clearinghouse, which identifies potential impacts on transportation infrastructure, and they've developed, working with state and local planning efforts, ways to better integrate climate change in consideration into the transportation decision-making process. The Federal Highway Administration is also using this pilot project approach to look at developing risk assessment models, which then could be used more broadly in evaluating what needs to be done to better adapt highway administration programs to climate change. Overall, you know, I'd say we've got a really good beginning, but far more needs to be done. Importantly, the work that you're doing at the state and local level needs to inform the federal government as it moves from its first steps to its second and third steps in developing its adaptation programs. So I would just encourage you, as I'm sure you already have been doing, but to make sure that your needs are clearly communicated to the federal program areas that you're working with. And, you know, over time, yeah, I can see this developing in a way where, you know, more of those needs are met and the federal programs become, you know, better able to meet those needs. So here's our website for you to find out more information, and please feel free to email me with any questions that you may have. And I thank you for your time and pass it back to Emma.
Thank you, Steve. And so folks know that the presentation has a lot of live web links in it. So when you have the opportunity to download a copy, please, you know, go ahead and follow some of those to some of the resources that Steve mentioned. There's a wealth of information that's been embedded, and I really encourage you to take a look and get some more details on some of those programs that may be of use to you.